Hey guys, how you guys doing? How are you all doing? I shouldn't have said guys twice in a row like that. Doesn't sound good. No teleprompter here, just the brain. As brainy as it is, or not. Dar Jamil will not be on the show today, god dang it. Sure is hard for me to get Dar Jamil on the show lately. He's a busy guy. But MJ Rosenberg will be here. So that's good. And I got a couple more invites out. I don't know. I got a bunch of notes. Everybody's busy. But I'm still hoping to hear back from Jason Leopold. He wrote a great thing, man. He's got some sources and some things. He can teach us what we don't know about the, as much as he's learned anyway, about the Senate torture report. Hey, I want to watch the levels and see just how badly those nail guns are registering on the mic here. That's not too bad, huh? Can you guys hear the nail guns? Well, of course they quit now. Take your broken car to the mechanic, it quits making the noise, right? There are a couple there. I think it's going to be all right. Nail guns, they're putting on a new roof next door, so these things happen at the studio sometimes. MJ, he's going to be on to talk about Saban and Adelson. And the Israel lobby and American foreign policy, man. Did you read the new Justin Raimondo column? Did you read the foreword in the last few days? Did you curse me Monday and Tuesday for not covering this? Well, geez, Monday the computer blowed up, and that wasn't my fault. I only got to do about 5 minutes of a show before the computer blowed up. And then yesterday, I just ran out of time. I had three interviews, and I had to talk about how much I hate George Bush. And some of the other things, and so I just, what was I going to do? But today we're going to cover it. Today I got a ton of news. I'm kind of glad I didn't hear back from a bunch of the guests, because I got a lot I just need to kind of get off of my plate here. Just get through it, get done with it. In fact, since most of the segment, half the segment's gone already kind of thing, on just the housekeeping, let me... I'll spend this segment getting the cop stories out of the way. How about that? So, housekeeping. ScottHorton.org. That's where I keep all the archives of the shows, and you can sign up for the podcast feeds there, the interviews, the whole show archives, all that. ScottHorton.org/donate. That's where you go if you want to help support the show. Anybody who donates $100 or more, you get a free QR code, pure silver 1 ounce commodity disc. No face value on it. You scan it with your phone and it tells you the instant spot price. It's the future of currency on earth. I think it's the greatest thing anyone ever invented. Although maybe it needs a better name, but still it's great. CommodityDiscs.com for more information about those. And then join up the chat room, man. We got a few guys in there. Hey, where the hell is everybody? Hey, chat room guys. How's it going? It's ScottHorton.org/chat. You don't need XChat or ChatZilla or Pigeon or none of them chat clients or any extra programs. Just go to plain old browser window, scotthorton.org/chat, fake name and a CAPTCHA, and you're in there. Or you can use any external application if you like. It's an IRC free node chat, hashtag Scott Horton Show. So join up and sit there and don't talk about anything the whole time. scotthorton.org/chat. And then, of course, I'm on the Liberty Radio Network here, weekdays, noon to 2. All right. And I'm more or less the editor of antiwar.com, although I don't have a job there anymore, and I'm not really called that. Look at antiwar.com for all the bad news, Jason and Justin. So the cop news here. 90 pounds of cocaine found on the incoming majority leader, or the once and now again incoming majority leader of the U.S. Senate, Mitch McConnell. His in-laws shit, they were leaving Colombia, they got pulled over by the Coast Guard. They had 90 pounds of coke. But the law is for you, not them, so don't worry about it. Here's another one from the Liberty Crier. Cop makes his girlfriend cook meth to support his habit. Here's a guy who, he's 8 years old. He was, I think, in his 20s, 27 years old. His mom called for help. He had a knife in his hand. But he had some disorder, Kallman syndrome, which means that he was basically like an 8-year-old boy. And so he had a knife, and the mom called 911, said her handicapped son was out in his pajamas. Can you please bring him home or take him to a psychiatric ward? So he was having a freak out. He did have a knife. But then, so what did the cops do? They just came and shot him. The witness says when the police saw the knife, they told him to put it down. But they continued to move forward toward him even though they saw the knife. And then they shot him. Well, I was coming at him. I had to shoot him. He had a knife and I was coming at him. Anyway, so the guy basically was some kind of retarded. I don't know exactly what Kallman syndrome is here, but and then of course they could use a taser, or really, I mean, if they're trained tough guys like they pretend to be, such heroes all the time, they could go for a swift kick to a knee, a stiff arm, and it's not easy to disarm a man with a knife necessarily, but you don't necessarily have to rush right at him with your Glock and kill him either. All these cops are just looking for an excuse to kill somebody. They can't wait to kill somebody. They're psychopaths. That's what they are. You know, I read this thing about the Columbine murders, where they were saying these guys weren't picked on nerds. It wasn't about video games and Marilyn Manson and whatever. It's the one of them. He was just a textbook psychopath. That's all he was. He's a psychopath. Guess what? A certain small percentage of males, white ones apparently especially, psychopaths. And most of those become cops. And every police department in America right now is hiring psychopaths. And if you check all the right boxes that you're a psychopathic killer, you get hired. And if you're not a psychopathic killer, the psychopathic killers who already run every police department in America will force you out. They're not going to have anybody stopping them, raining on their parade when their job is going out and murdering whoever they feel like and getting away with it because it's fun. It's fun. Stop pretending like just because you're not a ruthless killer that it's not fun for other people. It is too, and you know it. You know? Oh, but I'm not ruthless. Yeah, well, some people are. Here's an 8-year-old watches cops savagely beat his mother, smash her face into the table again at the Liberty Crier. That's all you need to be an anarchist in America, is subscribe to the Liberty Crier morning newsletter and just look at what the police do to the people in this country. Oh, this was in Canada. Same damn thing. America Jr. savagely beat this woman. Boy, look at her. Here, this cop threatened the wife that he's going to murder their two children. Luckily, I don't know if she told, when she called 911, if she told them he was a cop, they might have come for her. But she said, my husband's threatening to kill my children. Go and get him. She probably wisely neglected to mention his profession when making the call. They might have come and helped him kill the kids, right? Because they're psychopathic killers. That's what they are. Oh, also thieves. Just, they're corrupt. They're the most base, corrupt, destabilizing part of our society. The most violent part of our society. Our security forces, the police. They're the most violent gangsters that we have. Here they are, pretending that the dog alerted this car to just steal this couple's money. No, you don't have probable cause. No, you don't have a reasonable suspicion. No, you don't have anything. Am I free to go or what? No, you're not. You're going to have to sit here and wait till the dog gets here. And then the dog gets here and they go, hey, Scruffy, put your paw on the tire. Good boy. And of course, the Supreme Court has said, hey, if a dog says, then that's all the probable cause. You don't need a warrant at that point. You just go right ahead. And of course, they're just thieves. They're just stealing from people. That's all it is. They call it civil forfeiture. Oh, by the way, our new attorney general, the lady replacing Eric Holder, she's a world expert on accomplishing civil forfeiture. Stealing for the collective. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. Darren's Coffee. Order now at darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and save $2. Darrenscoffee.com. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. Now listen, I don't listen to Bruce Springsteen. I mean, when I was a kid in the 80s, Born in the USA was a big deal and all that kind of thing, but whatever. I never had his album. It's not my kind of music. But I did think it was hilarious to see on Fox News today and now in the Washington Post, there's this giant controversy over the fact that when they held a big rally for the rally for valor for Veterans Day yesterday, Springsteen played Born in the USA, which is an anti-Vietnam War song. And then he also did a cover of Creedence Clearwater Revival, Fortunate Son. Okay, a little subversive, but also generations old, okay? Conservatives have had decades to adjust their tiny emotions to the subversion in John Fogerty lyrics. Did he just say he's not a senator's son, and he kind of regrets and resents people who are senator's sons? Why, I'm not inviting him on my sailboat. When, they cry. Well, it's been generations of this. And look, they're crying on Fox News about it right now. Like they didn't know Springsteen was an anti-war guy. They didn't know that the lyrics of Born in the USA are all about the economy sucks because of the war, and the war sucks because now his brother's dead, and the VA sucks, and so you can go and shoot yourself. We had no idea. We're just shocked. Cry the tiny little conservatives' emotions through their tears. How in the world could you dishonor the valor of the government and its foreign policies? Really? Whatever the American Enterprise Institute thinks needs blowing up, huh? Otherwise, you'll cry. And meanwhile, Eminem that did the sort of anti-war, at least anti-Bush song and video I was reminded of last night. A friend on Twitter reminded me, Mosh, remember that? Everybody line up, wear your black hoodie, and get all revolutionary, and all march on D.C., and then line up to vote for the Democrat? What? Remember that? Oh, what an ending. Line up and vote for the Democrat. Well, he's perfectly happy to do pro-war rallies, too. Whatever, right? Money. And then, and this is the one that really pisses me off, Metallica. See, a big part of who I am is them, because that's my junior high school era of choice of music, dude. That's what I listened to, was Master of Puppets. And particularly, in fact, my favorite song on Master of Puppets, well, Kill 'Em All too, but Master of Puppets I had first. And the first song on the second side is Disposable Heroes. And man, like, I mean, first of all, the song rocks. I actually played it again yesterday. And there's a lead on there where, god dang, man. I mean, it's just, it's a conditioned response in my brain. Going back to my old history, that I love that freaking song. I must have listened to that song 100 times. And I remember reading along the lyrics, too. And I got brainwashed as hell by Metallica. And specifically that song. That great anti-war song, Disposable Heroes. AKA, why you should not believe in these people telling you to go kill and die. They're not believable. And your life is worth more than that. But, oh no, Metallica's perfectly happy. New Metallica, AKA Alice in Chains, with all their ballads and all their songs about James Hetfield's mommy. Oh, mommy, I'm sad, cries James Hetfield through his tears. So hold me, because I'm sad, he sings. Or the one, so be it, friends no more, right? Oh yeah, America's always been a great friend to the people of Iraq. Murdered millions of them by now, and they know that. They know that, but anyway, money. Money, right? Lars and Kirk and James, who have no dignity at all. No dignity at all. Get up there and play Disposable Heroes. This is a song about your best friend whose parts you left on the ground back in Iraq. Soldier boy, made of clay, now an empty shell. 21, only son, but he served us well. Oh, who's us? Yeah, in this case, Dick Cheney and Richard Pearl and Ariel Sharon and the Ayatollah Khomeini and Osama bin Laden. Yeah, we're all very, very proud of his sacrifice. Speaking of servants and blind men. And you know what's funny is, it was Cliff that died. The guy who was the hardest core out of all of them. Bus crash. Who knows? Cliff would have been the worst one of them now, right? He'd have been worse than Lars. Donating money to the Republican Party. Singing songs about how all good 17-year-olds ought to be thinking ahead to next year when they get to sign up for the Army. I hate Metallica. I hate them so much. I wish that they had all died the day that Cliff had died. And then that would have been the end of that. Yeah, no Injustice for All, but you know what? No big loss. I mean, I like some of the stuff on Injustice for All. But you gotta admit that was the beginning of the end right there. Even some of the stuff on Master of Puppets. Oh, hell, even some of the stuff on Ride the Lightning, right? I don't know. But certainly, with the Black Album, no, instead what they should have done is hanged themselves all from ropes instead of putting out that album. And that's just a scientific fact. And everything they wrote after that is a crime against humanity. And the fact that the authors of Disposable Heroes played the Rally for Valor last night and certainly did not play one for the boys back at the VA and certainly did not play any anti-war song. And they had more than a couple, I think. They suck. Kirk Hammett, kill yourself. Lars Ulrich, kill yourself. James Hetfield, chop yourself up into little pieces. Mostly for all those songs about your mom. We really don't care how you feel about your mom, James Hetfield. We really think that you should chop yourself into little pieces and no longer exist so that we don't have to hear it anymore, okay? Thank you. Signed, everyone who ever loved Metallica up to 1989. Sorry, but I've been needing to get that off of my chest for a couple of decades now. I've got a problem. That's how far in the future it is. For 2 years. Yeah, load. In the chat room, load. Let me tell you something. I worked at a sandwich shop where Jeffro, great guy, he would play the Jerky Boys and load. That's all we heard. That was the one I was quoting, the So Hold Me Because I'm Sad by James Hetfield, all about his mom didn't hug him enough when he was a kid. Really hardcore rock there, dude. You guys shred.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. Yeah, so this is how societies kill themselves, you know, empire. That's it. You know, when I called Jim Powell to get him on the show yesterday to talk about Woodrow Wilson's war, Well, let's see, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say that. So, but I can say this. We had this conversation where he was talking about just how many stars got aligned to have a free society or anything like it. The history of mankind is the history of cruelty and despotism. That's what it is. And he made a metaphor, not to steal his thunder. I'm giving him credit, whatever, I don't know. He made a metaphor to life. I mean, assuming you don't believe that, you know, Jesus snapped his fingers and created the earth 5,000 years ago or whatever. The only way life could exist on this earth right now is just the right distance from the sun and just the right history of being bombarded with just the right asteroids at just the right time and protected by Jupiter's giant gravity well that keeps most of the asteroids away from us. And then also, of course, the magnetic field that keeps all the radiation away, and it's a million lucky coincidences in a universe of galaxies upon galaxies upon galaxies. What are the odds that life could come about and achieve what it's achieved? It was just a one in a zillion that our Earth is what it is, that we are what we are here. And he's saying same kind of thing with liberty. I mean, and of course, this does not count for black people, women, Indians, or like that great on the Family Guy where they go down the list of everybody who doesn't count and it ends up including everyone. But still, liberty in America, there's a lot of it. There's a bigger middle class than anywhere ever. More people were allowed, you know, in average times to pursue their destiny and make their own way and keep what they earned than ever before anywhere. People come from all over the world still this day on the promise of that. They don't even mind working hard. As long as they get... You mean I get to keep what I actually earn? Really? Most of it? Huh. All right. I'll leave my home to go to America so I can live like that, they say. And it's because of our two oceans, our two weak and friendly neighbors, the vast expanse of land with very few people on. I mean, yeah, they massacre the hell out of the Indians, but most of them died of the spread of disease, which is more or less natural causes. I mean, the smallpox blankets thing happened once or twice. That wasn't the policy across the board. It was mostly just a lack of immunity. And the smallpox just wiped them out. Other diseases just wiped out the natives. And huge continent full of people. Full of nothing, full of resources for people to put to use, and an ideology at America's founding that was written into the law that said everybody gets equal protection of the law. You might not have anything else equal about you, but the law will treat you all equally. And so, yeah, there are classes, but also you can rise right out of your class because you own your property. And if you can improve it and make it worth that much more, there's nobody that can take it away from you. I'm vastly oversimplifying. But now, so that's just gone. The way that civilizations kill themselves, the way that moderately free societies become totalitarian states, it's the wars. It's always the wars. The foreign empire. You know, I saw a picture, an AP reporter tweeted out a cynical tweet of the cops at the rally for Valor last night. And they all look like Delta Force Special Forces operator guys. And all they are is the local cops. And they all look like they just got off the plane from Afghanistan in their full combat getup. You know, who are they expecting to go to war against there? But they're ready for war. And it trickles down. There's a trickle-down economic theory that you can always count on. As James Madison himself, the author of this mess, put it, the instruments of foreign war, something, something, usually, undoubtedly, or most always, or something, whatever, become the instruments of oppression at home. The instruments of tyranny at home. wrote the father of the Constitution, James Madison, its principal author, and also the author of the Bill of Rights, and also the first Speaker of the House of Representatives, and also the fourth President of the United States. That was what he said. Jefferson's sidekick, the guy that got us into a war with England. That's what Madison said. No nation can preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare. And, you know, right in front of all of our eyes, we're living it every day. It's the economy is what's really tearing at people's stresses. It's not like TV is showing you the burning bodies or anything like that. So nobody's really got to deal with the wars. But we got to deal with the cost of the wars. Your time on the unemployment line is your payment for the invasion of Iraq. But see, what happened was they created the money out of nothing and created a giant bubble to make it seem free. You might have even thought you were getting rich at the time. But then, blam, it was all fake. It was a big, hollow bubble of hot air, of expanded bank credit that didn't represent real wealth. It was just new currency. And so a vast number of those projects that had been started could not be finished because the capital, the real capital, wasn't there. And so then crash. It's not capitalism. It's the government system of central banking, which is necessary to wage a world empire. Because the American people, we just can't afford it cost up front. We just won't. If George Bush, despite the American people's childlike worship of George W. Bush after his greatest failure in the history of all American presidents ever on September 11th, and then they all worshipped him somehow, like he'd only been in office for a day rather than 9 months when that attack took place. But even then, with his 92% approval rating, if he had said, listen, as long as you're afraid, we're going to have to go ahead. We're going to go ahead and have another couple of wars, extra wars, too. We're going to stay in Afghanistan forever, and we're going to invade and occupy Iraq for 8 years, and it's going to cost you $5 trillion. So we're going to raise taxes across the board on everybody by 10% so that we can pay to invade Iraq. Well, what do you think would have happened to George Bush then? If instead of sending a $300 check in the mail, 2-3 years in a row there, instead of promising that the invasion will pay for itself because we're just going to steal their oil and sell it and keep the money, and it's going to pay for the invasion and the entire occupation and reconstruction of the country. It's going to be free, they promise. Remember how shocked your mom and dad were when they said it's going to cost $87 billion? That was their first appropriations bill for the occupation, $87 billion. And everybody had steam coming out of their ears. $87 billion? You said this was going to take 2 weeks and be fun and free. $87 billion? Yeah, well, now $870 billion would be, I don't know, less than a fifth, right? We're talking now $5, $6 trillion in total costs for that war. That's why they have to have a central bank. That's why they have to have big artificial booms. It's to make the empire seem like it's free for a while. And then, of course, when it crashes, you're feeling insecure. They can threaten you and tell you that, you're afraid. Take it out on these guys and point you toward another foreign enemy and do the whole damn thing again. That's how they paid for the expansion of the empire in the entire 1990s. Was the bubble that crashed in 1999 and 2000. You know that. Same thing with Reagan's military buildup, the bubble that crashed in 88, remember? Bush Sr.'s bubble crashed in 92, huh? It's the war spending. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org. All right, guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show. MJ Rosenberg's coming up. Talk about the Israel lobby. I got a ton of news about the Islamic State I got to get to here. Oh, crap, man. I meant to talk about that already. Well, I'll just skip it and say that for tomorrow or something. I got to get to the damn war. All right. Before I talk about the Islamic State, I got to talk about Russia and Ukraine. So there's fighting on the border. And CBS News is saying that Russia's defense minister has announced that they are going to expand and extend their long-range bomber patrols into the North Atlantic and the Arctic and even down into the Gulf of Mexico. Now, I don't know the history of that. Too bad Margulies ain't here. I'd ask him, is that how it was back in the 80s and the 60s, 70s? Did they fly their bombers in the Gulf of Mexico? I guess that's international waters, right? Some of it? God dang. Shoigu says, now, you know, I'm not saying I think the Russians are going to sneak attack anything or whatever, but boy, they sure are pushing back against the West big time here. And that is the truth of the situation. There's just no way around it. As much as Putin might be, you know, if he was an American politician, he'd be the worst kind of right-wing Republican who we all hate. But he ain't the one who started this. You know, that doesn't mean I approve of what he's doing at all. But the Americans are crazy if they think that the Russians are just going to take being kicked and kicked and kicked and kicked. You know, the Americans are the worst sports. That's the thing about it, dude. Think about that. Their entire empire fell apart. And they even said, oh, yeah, we're going to give you a hand now. We're going to be your friends now. Remember? Are you guys old enough that you remember how it was at the end of the Cold War? At one point, some Russian politicians anyway said, well, we want a constitution like yours. And the Americans said, no, you don't want that. No, that's way too unwieldy, you know. You need to be able to get things done over there, the Americans said. And then instead of figuring out a way to really figure, you know, a way to distribute the ownership of the resources in any kind of reasonable way, they instituted shock therapy, which just meant, let KGB cronies seize all industries and liquidate everything. And then ever since the terror war started, Vladimir Putin had taken the posture to George W. Bush that, like, hey, he was the first person to call George W. Bush. Hey, man, you want to kill jihadis? I'll help you. I hate him, too. What do you want to do? You want to invade Afghanistan? I'll help you. And reportedly, he had a big fight, and it took every bit of his political capital to face down the hardliners in the military and to his right in Russia and say he thought this was in Russia's national security interest, even if it was allowing us to use bases in Tajikistan and this kind of thing, former Soviet bases from when they had invaded, and that was risky, that there was more to gain by being friendly to America. Bush turned right around and withdrew from the anti-ballistic missile treaty. Not that they have any kind of realistic missile defense system at all, but it's a huge welfare program for politically connected corporations to pretend to make missile defense systems. And so it was a big priority of the Republicans, but a big smack in the face to Putin. And then ever since then, they just completely treat him like crap. Of course, Bill Clinton bombed Serbia, broke off Kosovo from him and all that. That sure pissed them off, too. But America's had such an aggressive posture. And in 1998, Bill Clinton brought in, 4 or 6 new members of NATO. And then in 2004, Bush brought in, 6 or 9 more or something? So the only Eastern European countries, that's how you count them now. You count which Eastern European countries aren't in NATO. And it's Ukraine, Belarus, and Moldova. And I forget if Hungary. I think Hungary might not be. No, Hungary is in NATO, isn't it? Hungary is in NATO. Hungary's one of them. I don't have the list in front of me. But in other words, you know, NATO is not just some organization where politicians meet. It's a treaty. That's what it is. I mean, there's an organization, a whole bureaucracy of job holders up there threatening to doom mankind to extinction, you know, because it's their profession and all that. But what NATO really is it's a treaty. It says if any of us ever get attacked by anyone, we'll go to war. All of us will go to war to defend them. Collective security from here all the way to Russia's door. Meaning, if Russia decides, say someone meaner than Putin, decides, you know what? I don't like Lithuania, and I feel like occupying it, and what are you going to do about it? That means that Americans are pledged to all die in a nuclear war with Russia to defend Lithuania. That's what it means. I wonder how many times the pollsters ever make that clear. Do they even ask this question at all? Are you happy being signed up to die in a hydrogen bomb holocaust in order to defend towns in Eastern Europe that you have never heard of in your life and that you never will hear of in your life? You ready to give up your hometown for that? And they've done nothing but expand and expand. And, you know, I think there's some terrible, obvious, but terrible truth on such a disturbing level in what John Mearsheimer had to say on the show when I interviewed him about this and his piece for Foreign Affairs correctly blaming the United States. He said, you know, it's just about this kind of idea of spreading neoliberalism as, you know, the end of history and the last man. This is just how it is. And so spreading the EU, spreading NATO, trade agreements, it's just kind of a mantra among the foreign policy elite, and they just can't stop. And I'm saying, yeah, but what about interests? Yeah, but what about hatred? You say they love spreading, you know, Clintonian-style, quote-unquote, free markets and democracy. What about they hate Russia? They're still not over how much they hate Russia. What about that? What about benevolent global hegemony that says if any nation on this earth is powerful enough to resist our might, it is a threat to us? What about malevolence? And he was like, man, no, I really don't think so. I don't think it's oil interests. I don't think it's military strategy. I think basically he was saying it's a bunch of damned Democrats, a bunch of, you know, wonky wonks, State Department weenies over there with their little ideas. And I think that, unfortunately, that is in large measure true. I'm certainly not so dismissive of the interests, but I worry that the policy really is that mindless, in a sense. That unwilling, that unable to stop and check with reality every once in a while to see how it's working out. What all exactly do we gain by using Nazis, real, no-fooling, Hitler-loving Nazis to overthrow the government in Kiev and install a more Western European and American-friendly government there? What do we get out of that? A few American companies get the hookup on some grain, maybe an oil pipeline. Some people who hate Russia get to stick their thumb in Russia's eye. And what do the rest of us get? Hydrogen bomb patrols in the Gulf of Mexico. A war that's killed thousands and thousands in eastern Ukraine since the spring, and which keeps going back and forth. And, you know, I can basically just take the words right out of the mouth of Eric Garrison. I was talking with him this morning. It's the exact same thing I think, too. It's impossible, really, to doubt, I think, right, that the Russians have special forces in eastern Ukraine, that they are equipping the eastern Ukrainian so-called rebels in Donetsk and Luhansk in their resistance from the attacks on the by the Kiev government, on them by the Kiev government. But again, I read in the Daily Beast yesterday, 7,000 Russian soldiers invade Ukraine. Damn it. They've been saying that for months. It's now November. They've been saying that since March. They've been saying that since February. Well, no, maybe not February. Since March or April. Thousands of Russian soldiers invading. You might wonder, if they had an invasion of 5,000 or 7,000 troops a couple of months ago, and now they have another invasion for a total of that same 5,000 or 7,000, how come the numbers don't add up? Where are the pictures of these thousands of Russian infantry? Show us.
Hey, Al Scott here for Whole Food Multicomplete at WholeFoodComplete.com. Whole Food Multicomplete is an entire supplement program in one bottle, containing 100% RDA of vitamins and minerals, plus live probiotics, digestive enzymes, antioxidant herbs, energy nutrients, and more. It's made in America using real foods and live probiotics. No chemical synthetics. It's soy-free, gluten-free, and independently tested and verified. They're so sure you'll love it, they're taking 20% off your first order with coupon code Scott Horton. Satisfaction is guaranteed at WholeFoodComplete.com.
All right, y'all. Welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, Scott Horton Show. So the Iran talks, I don't know. Last I heard, they're going nowhere. They're working on it. I don't know. Well, you know what? I'm going to save all the Iran talks stuff for the MJ interview because that's what it's about. We got the lobby. We got Palestine. And we got Iran. Talk about with him. I don't know if we'll have time to cover it all, but we'll try. All right, now, the Islamic State here. So, first of all, U.S. troops back in Iraq's Anbar province, writes Nancy Youssef. They said they sent 50 troops so far out there, I guess, to decide what they're going to do. They're sending another 1,500 troops. Of course, Obama announced it right after the elections. Why did he think that for some reason the Democrats would do worse? If he was already breaking his pretended promise that he was not sending ground troops into Iraq. And when they say 1,500 troops, that's not 1,500 JSOC. They don't tell you when they're sending JSOC. That's 1,500 Army. Maybe Rangers, but probably it just means infantry, right? It could mean Marines, but they don't usually call them Marine soldiers. Troops, nah, you can count Marines as troops if you want. And anyway, so there's that. Wait till after the election. Now there'll be something on the order of 3,000 official troops and then however many special forces are there, along with the CIA and the Mercs. And then blam, brand new Patrick Coburn. Did you guys see this at UNS? It's at antiwar.com today. PKK commander tasked with the defense of Syrian Kurds claims, quote, "We will save Kobani." And it's Patrick Coburn climbing around in the Kandil Mountains and interviewing a Kurdish leader. And, saying with the PKK and the YPG and now the Peshmerga working together that they are driving the Islamic State out. And I hope that's right. I regret that the Americans are involved at all. Even though, you know, I don't mind ever hearing that Islamic State guys got blown apart with high explosives. That's perfectly fine. I just don't want it to be America's doing anymore. That's what made it this way in the first place. Simple thought experiment. Remember when there were better than 100,000 American soldiers and Marines in Iraq? And they didn't eliminate the Islamic State. Their presence created it in the first place. And then all they did was chase it around in circles for years and years until the local Sunnis finally turned on them and marginalized them. The people that had, they had been, welcomed by for a time, stabbed him in the back. And even then, all that did was marginalize him. As Prothero said the other day, what they did really, the American help there with the help of the tribes, they took out the middle management. They never did really eliminate the leadership of the Islamic State. And look how easy it was to put it back together again. But now we're going to send, a few thousand here, a few thousand there. And some airstrikes, and this is going to degrade and defeat Al-Qaeda in Iraq times 1,000, which is what the Islamic State is right now. Al-Qaeda in Iraq circa 2006, only with a state Only they rule. They are the bosses. And they have alliances, but still, they are in the leadership positions in half a dozen major cities. Near half a dozen, anyway. Pretty close. And a lot of towns, too. And the entire Euphrates Valley. So, sending Marines to shoot at them did not get rid of them. But sending many fewer Marines and air power, well, that'll take care of it. Hey, chat room guys, can you hear the skill saw out there? Let me know if you can hear the skill saw. Not that there's anything I can do about it, but I'd like to know if you can hear the skill saw, that's all. But anyway, so yeah, read this Patrick Coburn. It's a really great one. And where's the good part? Because he talks about the relationship between al-Nusra and ISIS here a little bit too. Anyway, if you're looking for Patrick Coburn, always just look over at uns.com or at antiwar.com. We run virtually all the... Occasionally he says things like, oh, it's justified to attack the Islamic State who are besieging Sinjar or something, which is unbelievable to me that he would say that in his op-eds sometimes, but we run all of his hard news stuff anyway. He's not an ideological guy. He's a reporter, you know? So, I mean, who can argue that it's immoral to explode Islamic State guys? It's only immoral for the U.S. government to tax people and turn those tax dollars into weapons and do the exploding, since it's all their fault in the first place. But the actual, narrowed down to the exploding of Islamic State fighters, psh, go ahead and explode them, somebody. You know what I think they should do? I think they should hire Russia to do it. Contra Margulies, and on the show yesterday, saying we have no common interest with Russia. America's happy to use the Mujahideen against them in Bosnia and in eastern Western China. In Chechnya, but, well, their client state Syria is threatened by the Mujahideen right now. They have an alliance, not exact alliance, but a friendship with Iran. Why not America completely withdraw from the Middle East and let Russia back Syria and Iran against the Islamic State and let it be their problem? No, really. Why not let it be their problem? Why in the world we gotta insist? It's like if you ever knew somebody in the neighborhood who insisted on getting in the middle of everybody else's fight. Anytime anybody else has a problem, he jumps in, starts punching both of them. I mean, what is this? America's crazy, dude. America's run by crazy people. That's what it is. But anyway, so, yeah, and this is the rise of Kurdistan, too. That's sort of the subtext of this, is that the relationship between the larger Kurdish nation and Turkey, which has been getting better since Erdogan came into power, is at a very severe kind of crossroads here for what's going to happen in their future and whether they can get along. And, you know, I think it's very likely that by the end of this thing, Kurdistan will, at least Iraqi Kurdistan, will declare itself an independent state. So far, they have their alliance with Shiite Baghdad, but not for long, and they've got a lot of oil to fight about. They've got Kirkuk to fight about, assuming they can keep the Islamic State out of it. They have a lot of contrary interests as opposed to common interests. The Kurds are making more money selling their own oil than selling it through the Baghdad government and also getting their cut of Basra oil too, right? They'd rather just sell their own oil and screw you guys. And you know how it is in the old world, man. Every ethnicity wants a state with a line in the wrong place so that they can all kill each other over where the line should be from now on. It's the curse of Eurasia. But anyway, so, yeah, that's, I think, will be a big part of this. And then I always think of, do you ever remember that part of V for Vendetta where Amidala is getting ready and on the TV behind her, the TV news is saying, America's war in Kurdistan enters its fourth year. You know, it takes place, the movie takes place in the not-too-distant future, a few years from now, right? Yes, America's war in Kurdistan continues raging. Yeah, that one's maybe one or two steps of consequences from now, but soon enough. There. Now, they say Baghdadi might have been injured, but I don't know, man. They did target him. And, again, I'm not for the Americans having any presence whatsoever over there. But I would be happy to find out that Baghdadi was killed. And I would like to think that if that was... I'd like to think that that would be fairly disruptive to the organization. And that if they can be turned back into an insurgency from a pseudo-state like they are now, just at the hands of local powers in their disarray. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, I'm Scott. Welcome back to the show. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. MJ's going to be on here in just a minute. Finally, it'll be the enemy talking and MJ's turn to talk. Well, you know me. I ask pretty long questions, but yeah. Lots to cover with him. More on the Islamic State in the Sinai Peninsula. A group down there under the control of Egypt, of course, has declared their loyalty to the Islamic State. There was a group in Libya back 2 weeks ago attempted to do the same. It's spreading. And, you know, it's just like Al-Qaeda. It's a brand name, a franchise type of a name. And the longer this goes on, at the hands of America mostly, it's what made it this way in the first place, the longer they're going to continue growing. Already, there's just no denying it. Since the American airstrikes have started, all the intelligence agencies agree. More and more people are going and volunteering. Foreigners are traveling to Iraq to fight, and clearly they've recruited a hell of a lot of Iraqis. Did you hear the entire Prothero interview the other day? Recorded it Saturday for the Sunday show on KPFK, but went overtime and interviewed him for about an hour. And, what was I going to say about that? Let's see about making more of them. Oh, yeah, estimating the numbers of Islamic State fighters. You know what? This conversation may have taken place off the air. I forget. But it wasn't anything confidential anyway. It was just him doing like a... If it was off the air, it's all right to say. He was just saying, well, let's see. You have, you know, this many fighters in Kobani right now. You got this many guys running things in Raqqa and this many running, you know, holding things down in Mosul, Fallujah, to Crete. And you got this many fighters, you know, doing this, that, and the other thing here, there, and the other place. And that adds up to me to be, you know, I don't know, 30,000 sounds low. And so he was saying that's how he estimates the numbers, is just what actually are they doing and how many men must it take for them to be able to do those specific things. And it seems like to him, and it sounded like a reasonable argument the way he put it, maybe the CIA estimate that they tell us that there are about 30,000 of these guys is low. I mean, the question is about leadership. Most of those guys are just volunteers and not, you know, the hardcore, but... I'll refer you to this other one by Patrick Coburn here, The Brutal Reality of Life in Mosul Under the Islamic State. And I got two major things to say about this. The first one is these Islamic State guys are such bastards. I mean, they are just horrible. But that's not a costless belly. That's why to stay out. That's why to stay out. They're completely surrounded by enemies. The Iraqi government, the Shiite militias, the Kurdish militias, the Turks. Well, the Turks aren't their enemies, but they're strong enough to keep them out of Turkey, that's for sure. Bashar al-Assad, the army of Jordan, the military dictatorship in Egypt. You see how I'm going counterclockwise around the map here. And then down to the Arabian Peninsula. They can't get to Riyadh anyway. And Kuwait, of course, is protected by Shiistan there and Iran. So, They're completely hemmed in. And then the residents of Sunnistan that they are attempting to foist their totalitarian rule on virtually all hate them. I mean, here are guys saying, I would rather have the Shiite government from Baghdad back. I hate these guys so much. And no doubt about it, they are totalitarians. They're like communists or Nazis. They're completely fanatical. They recognize no limit on what authority they have over anyone. Last week, word passed to Coburn here, a woman uncovered her face to, and this is not the way Iraqi Sunnis have lived. It's not. This is an Arabian phenomenon, that women, you know, in Iraq, they used to all wear jeans and blouses. But here this woman has to have the full black, body covering. She uncovered her face to drink a bottle of water, and the Islamic State thug came up and, hit her on the head with a stick, not noticing that her husband was standing right there, and since he owns her, he may give her permission to drink from a water bottle. And anyway, the point is, these guys, many of them are foreigners, and they are way out of line. Remember, Coburn said when they first came to town, they started doing a census of how old everybody's daughter is, because, hey, some of us need wives. Whoa, yeah, well, back off there a little bit, buddy. You've been the mayor of this town for all of 6 hours. Think you need to back down a little bit there. And we saw what happened in 2006. The Iraqi Sunnis shot these guys and killed them and said, you're not the Islamic State of Iraq. That was when they first tried to call themselves the Islamic State after Zarqawi was killed. The next leader said, this is the Islamic State of Iraq. And the Iraqi Sunnis were like, no, it's not. It's our auxiliary militia of foreigners who helps us and die in suicide bombings for us sometimes. You'll be damned if we're going to let you be our government. Forget it. That was what they said in 2006 and 2007. And I think that that's the solution to this problem. Do nothing. Let the Iraqi Sunnis kill Baghdadi and his men. They will get tired of this soon enough. And then the other thing of it is, though, it's a counter argument to that. And that is, as Coburn has stressed, it's in his book, The Jihadi's Return, and it's in many of his articles going back for the last couple of half a year, that they're in a much stronger position than they were in 2006. The Islamic State, as George W. Bush, their father, said correctly over the weekend, they are Al-Qaeda plus. What he said was, they are Al-Qaeda plus. But what he meant, they're Al-Qaeda plus. They're Al-Qaeda only about 1,000 times more powerful than Al-Qaeda in Iraq ever was. By the way, Al-Qaeda in Iraq never existed until when? Pop quiz. The end of 04. The invasion of Iraq took place in the spring of 03. So it was a year and 9 months into the occupation of Iraq that Zarqawi finally declared his loyalty to bin Laden. That was when there was finally an Al-Qaeda guy in the country. After Saddam had been long driven from power. After a year and almost, a year and three quarters of American occupation. Only then did Al-Qaeda in Iraq ever even exist. But, you know, I digress. The point is, it's going to be much harder for the local Sunnis to do their Anbar awakening this time. But it's still on them to do it. And if America, even if most of our fighters are black and brown, I guess not in the Air Force, but still the leadership, of course, are all presumed to be white Christian crusaders, in alliance with the Jewish Israelis, in alliance with the apostate heretic Shiites of Iran and their auxiliary militias in Iraq and their Dawah party and scary government there. America is only serving the Islamic State's PR goals and guaranteeing that this problem will continue to perpetuate itself. Continue to be perpetuated, I mean to say.
Hey, Al, Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Hey, check it out. I got MJ Rosenberg back on the line here. Been a little while. Hey, MJ, how are you?
Okay, how are you, Scott?
I'm doing real good. Very happy to have you back here.
Thank you.
Let me tell the people about you for a minute. You were Senior Foreign Policy Fellow at Media Matters Action Network and worked on Capitol Hill for the Democrats as a staffer for congressmen and senators for 15 years. And in the early 80s, you were the editor of AIPAC's weekly newsletter,
yeah,
the Near East Report. And, it says here, too, from 1998 to 2009, you were director of policy at the Israel Policy Forum. All right, so, and people can find your articles at the Huffington Post and other places like that. Okay, so very happy to have you on. The reason I brought you on is I was wondering about what all you would have to say about this this meeting where the two, I guess, most rich and powerful Jewish donors to the two American political parties got in a contest to see who likes killing people more, blowing stuff up more, I don't know. And who could denounce everything that is, like peace, democracy, the very basics of what people tend to think are the default consensus in America and in Israel, for that matter. I'm blabbering because I'm paging through looking for the title of the thing. It's the Israeli-American Council. It's their inaugural conference is where they were speaking. And I'm sure you're familiar with this, and I guess we could go through the different parts of it. But I think, first of all, can we talk about the conversation about whether it matters or not whether Israel is a democratic state? What was the context there for Sheldon Adelson, the leading donor to the in America to the Republican Party?
Yeah, the big issue that people point to as a reason for Israel to divest itself of the occupied territories is that if it keeps the territories and as it seems to be doing, and doesn't allow the people inside the territories, the Palestinians, to vote in Israeli elections, and of course they're not allowed to vote in Israeli elections, so long as that continues, Israel is not a democracy. And if it's made permanent with, let's say, a formal annexation, then Israel is formally no longer a democracy. And so people on the dovish side of the Zionist spectrum say, you got to get rid of the territories because otherwise Israel won't be a democracy. The right-wingers like Sheldon Adelson and so many others say, well, yeah, that's true. If Israel holds on to the territories, there'll be more Arabs inside Israel than there are Jews. And that would be a problem for democracy. So the answer to that is get rid of democracy. It's only a problem having more Arabs in Israel than Jews if you care whether it's a democracy. And Sheldon says, to hell with democracy. It's a concept that doesn't apply to the Middle East anyway.
Wow.
And that was one of the many crazy things that were said at this new organization. It's like a dual loyalty organization. What's it called again? The Israel-American Council?
Right, the Israeli-American Council, yeah.
It's like so it's not a Jewish-American, a traditional American-Jewish organization. It jumps to the next level where it's dual citizens. Obviously, 99.9% of American Jews are only citizens. of the United States. This organization is for people who are dual citizens. It's like, really? Okay. Now they have to have their own organization, and they have these Saban, who is the biggest supporter of Hillary Clinton, number one, her number one donor. He's a dual citizen. He's an Israeli-American. He's from Israel. Sheldon Adelson, the one who's the big Republican donor, the number one Republican donor to both right-wing causes, Newt Gingrich, Santorum, all those guys, Romney, but also just as much to fighting labor unions, which he hates labor unions even more than he claims to love Israel. He's not a dual citizen, except his children are Israelis, and he says his dream for them is that they become snipers in the Israeli army. Now, these people are billionaires, and because they're Americans, even Saddam was from Israel, Adelson was from here, they obviously have, there are no limits on what they can do in campaigns. So they are, between the two of them, one is buying up the Democratic candidates, and one's buying the Republican candidates.
Well, and the thing about this is you actually couldn't overstate this in a way. I mean, the story about Chris Christie accidentally referred to the occupied territories as the occupied territories, and there was a giant scandal about that. They're called disputed because we're not done stealing them yet, pal, and you're on board for that. That's the consensus, and you screwed up. And he had to go back, according to Politico, had to go back to the mob boss's back office and kiss his ring and get down on one knee and beg forgiveness for accidentally referring to the West Bank as occupied. And this is a guy who has given more than the Koch brothers. This guy has given more than the Koch brothers. He is the single largest donor to the Republican Party.
Yeah, it's that thing about the occupied territories was nuts. With even MSNBC reported that Christie had made a gaffe. That was the word, by calling it the occupied territories. I know the Hebrew. That's what it's called in Hebrew too. What they are, the occupied territories.
Yeah, of course.
But the far right in Israel and the far right here say, oh, no, they're not occupied. Wait a minute. It's truly nuts.
Yeah, it's not even the West Bank. It's Judea and Samaria. They don't even recognize it as Palestinian territory at all. As Netanyahu said in his UN speech that, hey, listen, if there ever is anything like a second state there, it won't be because they have a right to it. It's our land. We might give them some of it if we feel like it, meaning never.
Right, exactly. I mean, we're really into. I have to say, I have never been so dispirited and depressed. Not so much about the situation over there, where I think the Palestinians are quite capable of resistance, and I think they will, and they are resisting. But over American politicians, it really is. You know, as someone who worked, and as you say, Scott, I did work at AIPAC back in the day. I know this issue. I know, and I worked in Congress for 15 years or 20 or whatever it was. All this quote unquote support for Israel is bought and paid for. It's really amazing. You know, I started working up there when I was 28, and I was there for such a long time. I know what congressional aides think. I know what congressmen think. The days when AIPAC comes up to Capitol Hill to make their demands, it's when people are gagging over having to sit down with these people. But they do, and they tell them exactly what they want to hear because they get the money, which of course does not, as I often say on your show, which does not make AIPAC different from all the other corrupt lobbies that buy these congressional whores. That's just business as usual,
right.
except Israel is a foreign country.
They have such a, it's a foreign country, and they have such a disproportionate effect. You know, I'm no fan of the NRA. I mean, they love cops a lot more than a civilian's right to bear arms.
Uh-huh.
They're terrible Republicans. But you could argue that, well, hey, half of Americans are gun owners, and they got a right to be represented, a right to petition their government up there. That
right.
kind of thing. But a foreign government has what right to petition to rule the entire discussion of what the policy should be about their country in this manner is quite a bit different. when Jews are only 2% of Americans, and most of them aren't Likudniks by a long shot. I got a poll right here says they want to give up the West Bank. We're going to take a break. MJ Rosenberg, more in just a sec. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. If this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. And goddamn commercial breaks always messing up my show, man. I'm talking with MJ Rosenberg, and I was ranting at him as we're going out to break there about how most American Jews, assuming they're even interested in Israel issues at all, which I think is kind of a big assumption, but the polls say here Israeli majority wants peace, wants to give up the West Bank for a Palestinian state. And, of course, there are a million polls like that that say the same thing about American Jews, and yet the richer you are, the more right-wing you are most of the time. And so we end up with a very right-wing policy being bankrolled by these extremely rich oligarch types. I think it's funny that it's a casino magnate who is the ruler of the supposedly conservative Christian Republican Party right now, MJ. They don't give a damn about that. What does God say about gambling? I have no idea. He doesn't say anything about democracy either, so forget that too.
You know, one of the things that strikes me when we're talking about, you know, when we're talking about this Saban and Adelson agreeing on everything at this right-wing summit, the fact of the matter is the Democrats, I'm a Democrat, and I vote lesser of two evils all the time. Right or wrong, that's what I do. I always vote lesser evil. The fact of the matter is the Democrats are worse than the Republicans on this, and here's the reason why. Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party, they have their Chaim Saban and all these rich donors who are associated with AIPAC in Israel, who tell them what to do, and they have to listen. The reason they have to listen is the Democratic Party does not have that many sources of big money. So and it's estimated that 40% of the money that the Democrats get come from sources associated with AIPAC and the lobby. Republicans, on the other hand, yeah, they've got Adelson, and yeah, they've got a few other right-wing, pro-Israel types. But they're a tiny portion of the money they have because they get so much money from big business and the corporations. So that is why I think when that George Bush at the end of his term absolutely refused the Israeli request to bomb Iran. But I think that when the opportunity comes, and it probably will in the next presidential term, Hillary Clinton, if she's president, will agree. Democrats can't say no. Neither party will say no to their big source of money. But for the Republicans, the pro-Israel money is absolutely dwarfed by all the other corrupt money that they have. And Democrats don't have as many sources.
Right.
So that puts, in my opinion, Hillary Clinton, if she's elected, will be the most emphatically Likud president we've ever had. And that includes George W. Bush or Bill Clinton or Barack Obama.
Man, can you imagine? Well, I think it's going to be Jeb anyway, and he'll be bad enough. But
he'll be bad enough. I doubt on this issue that he would be as bad as Hillary would be, for the reason I mentioned. He's a corporate tool. He's not an AIPAC tool.
Yeah, he's got so much money locked up from wherever he wants it. That's definitely true, yeah.
It's an important distinction, and it's like I see now that on MoveOn.com has a campaign to try to get this really good African-American woman, Congresswoman Donna Edwards from Maryland, to become the head of the DCCC, which raises the money for the Democratic congressional campaigns. And I'm interested to see it. I mean, it's the only I've never seen a public campaign for someone to be head of the DCCC. But here's the thing that MoveOn doesn't understand. The head of the DCCC is picked depending on how close they are to AIPAC. the current head of the DCCC, who was such a disaster this time, his name is Steve Israel, which cracks me up, actually. I mean, it's like Donna Edwards is independent on this issue, is not an AIPAC tool. I'd be willing to bet the house. No way Donna Edwards becomes head of the DCCC. The Democrats are owned by the lobby.
Amazing. Well,
it really is amazing.
There's that New Yorker piece says he built the new Democratic National Committee headquarters. Haim Sabin did.
He did?
Yeah, he paid millions and millions of dollars for it.
I mean,
that was in the I forget her name at the New Yorker.
Oh, Connie Brook.
Connie Brook's piece. Yes, exactly.
Oh, see, this is how these people operate, and he also bought the Brookings Institute. Department that deals with the Middle East. It's called the Chaim Saban Center.
Well, and so, remember the Jane Harmon scandal?
Pardon?
Do you remember the Jane Harmon scandal from a few years back?
Yeah, the one about her waddling over to whatever she was doing?
Well, what happened was that the NSA was spying legitimately on an Israeli spy in America, and she happened to be on the phone with him. And she was agreeing that she would try to put pressure on the White House to back off the prosecution of Rosen and Weissman.
Yes,
and
yeah,
he would get Haim Sabin.
Yeah, I will waddle over to to the White House.
To
make sure that that prosecution ended, which it did.
Right, and then the promise was, and then I'll have Haim Sabin tell Nancy Pelosi that she better make you the chair of the House Intelligence Committee. Can you imagine? An Israeli asset, a functioning Israeli asset, and the plan was to make her head of the House Intel Committee, but the NSA tipped off Nancy Pelosi, and so she refused.
It's really, the whole thing's incredible. And who are these people speaking for? They're speaking for Benjamin Netanyahu. You know, there was a poll out there, one of the polls that are in front of you there. It's in the last two elections of the American Jewish community, there were 6 million American Jews in America, 6 million American Jews. 4% consider Israel when they cast their vote. So, I mean, so the one thing we have to disabuse ourselves of the notion of is that it's this stuff is all about votes. It's all about money. So every couple of years they'll say, oh, the Jewish vote is 75% for Barack Obama. The Jews overwhelmingly do not want to bomb Iran. They want negotiations. But that doesn't matter. It's the money people that matter. So it's like we have this, we're taught in school that our democracy is about votes. That is yesterday. The votes come with the money. And now we're finding out that in the elections that we just had, the more money that was spent, more likely you were going to win. I mean, it's just, and Democrats, we have to always remember, are just as bad. The only big difference about Democrats and Republicans is when you say to Democrats, are you influenced by all that money you get from this or that special interest? They act shocked. They say, well, Republicans are, but that's not us. We're the good people. I mean, it's really, on some of these issues, particularly the Middle East, they are exactly the same, except for the Democrats being a little worse. You know what we're going to watch, it's going to be really interesting, is if Obama is able to reach this historic agreement with Iran in November, watching the lobby and the Israelis killing that deal.
Right.
Or at least trying. It'll be there. I mean, they're really happy now because their buddies, John McCain and Lindsey Graham are promising to block it in the Senate.
Right.
But really it'll be a clear choice between American interests and the interests of peace and all that and the interests of Netanyahu and the opportunity he seeks to have this war with Iran.
Well, and speaking of which, this brings up really the subject, the Harmon thing kind of reminded me there, but that too on the Iran deal, about the origin of the leak to the Wall Street Journal about Barack Obama's letter to the Ayatollah. That did not seem like a Terror Tuesday type official sanctified leak from Obama. It seemed to me like an Israeli mole inside the government got a hold of that and turned it over to the Wall Street Journal, tattletaling on the president, as it were.
Exactly. The White House immediately, they put out a statement saying they did not release the letter. No, I think that was an agent of influence, at best, inside the White House. I mean, and, you know, it could have been anybody. I mean, we remember under Bush, we had Elliot Abrams used to, every time, you know, Bush would talk about he would, you know, in a private meeting, he was going to do this or that to pressure a little bit for peace. Elliot Abrams would get on the phone and tell the, you know, the Israeli prime minister, don't do it. We had Dennis Ross doing that under the Democrats. I don't know who the person is now. Whoever the agent is now, he's got a lower profile than these earlier guys. But of course it came from them. I mean, I don't know how a president can even do business in that kind of climate.
Yeah,
I mean, it's really, it's just really incredible. It was all this stuff with NSA and all the things we hear about, prosecution of totally innocent people for doing things that are totally not in any way dangerous to the U.S. You have a presidential letter to the head of state of Iran that's leaked by someone who works at the White House, and there's no story about, there's nothing about that there's going to be an investigation, because there will not be an investigation. AIPAC will not permit an investigation. It's nuts.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even a scandal. I mean, the story's over. It's only a scandal among, you know, critics like you and me and antiwar.com and stuff like that, but otherwise.
Exactly. No, it's not. Where are the reporters? The good ones who are covering the NSA scandal, like in the Times, like right. Rice and other people, yep. Why aren't they talking about this?
MIA. All right, that's MJ Rosenberg. Thanks very much for coming back on the show, MJ. Great
Thank
talk
you,
to you again.
Scott. Take care.
See you guys tomorrow. Hey, Al Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all. QR Silver Commodity Discs. The first ever QR code 1-ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks.